Mr. McNee, Reel 3. Now, we were talking about your time with the 2nd 544 Yeomanry after they'd become an armoured regiment at Whitby. Mm-hmm. And they must have had a lot of training to do on the moors, because they seem to have spent half that year on the moors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were they doing up there, and how far would that involve you as a fitter?
Strictly as a being, I recall quite a bit of fiction. One of the idler on the track was torn off, and this was caused by heather and muck getting into the track and underneath and overstretching the whole thing. It couldn't take it, so it ripped it off. And I remember we did a job of, because it couldn't be moved, it was up on some slope, and I remember having to replace that. So that's what I was involved in. But a lot of the time, driving instruction, and coming down from the moors on icy roads and trying to negotiate through the roadblocks. You know, the huge concrete blocks where the traffic would have to zigzag through these things. And with a tank that's sliding down there, it was quite horrendous at times. And because the slopes were quite steep.
So your job was teaching, a lot of the time, still teaching on these Matildas and Valentines.
Yeah.
And how did the lads, I mean, you took to tanks very quickly. Did you find that the lads took to it quickly themselves, or were some people very slow?
Some were slow, oh yes. Some dreadfully slow.
What problems might some have? What did they find difficult?
Well, it was the Valentine was a difficult tank to drive. So that was the one that was constantly, and that's what we had at the time.
That was your main tank, you said?
15 mile an hour, you know, they were very slow. And that was in high gear on a good road. Then we had, I think we had one with a GM two-stroke engine, which had synchromesh gearbox. Now that was a different story altogether. We just no problem. But this other thing was a crash gearbox. Okay. Now what kind of engine was in that? Doesn't matter, does it? The Valentine.
Were the engines themselves reliable?
Yes, very reliable.
Now, so you spent that time driving instruction, teaching people that. What else? Anything else they were teaching you?
No. I wasn't. It wasn't necessary for me. A bit of map reading, that was all, I think.
How did they teach you that?
Out on schemes. In the south of England, anyway. I didn't get any map reading in Whitby.
Right. So the next thing would be when you went to round about Brighton and Hove. They were there in 1942, middle to late. What do you remember of that period?
Not that tremendous amount, to tell you the truth. I remember going into the Dome, Brighton, to dances, and one night. I walked this girl home to the east, and we were in, what was it, Hayward's Heath or something it was called. It was a big estate with a fancy driveway into it.
That's near Brighton, isn't it?
Yes, east of Brighton, on the way to Lewis, is it? Lewis? Anyway, I walked this girl out, and it was along the coastway, and then to get back, I had to go up over the road, and... here was a German bomber, just about 1,000 feet up. I remember as clear as day, it was moonlight night, and I thought, and of course the throb of the engine, that was different. I remember thinking, oh my God, I hope you don't drop anything, but I distinctly remember that. Of course, you got a pass, and you were supposed to be in by midnight, so we had to try and get back to camp by then. But I seem to remember we slept in the trucks.
What were your main record? I mean, when you went into Brighton, or what would you do? I mean, had you started drinking by then, or would you just go to the dances and the cinema?
Didn't drink, didn't smoke. Just the cinema and the dances. I'd learnt a bit of dancing before the war, you know, a professional teacher, the quick step, and that sort of thing. So that would be the part thing. I don't know. Can't seem to recall us. Going on any schemes of any sort there.
Were you bothered about the cinema? You know, I mean, when you went out, would you go to the cinema much?
I don't think so.
So for you, it's dancing, that's what worried you.
Yeah, and somewhere to get a cup of tea or some sort of casual meal. You know.
Now, what was it? Would it be while you were at Brighton area that you did your map reading?
Yes, yes. I was seeing in that area. Or, well, we went further east there. I seem to remember.
There were a couple of places around Brighton, and then they went down to Farnham near Bury St Edmunds, and then Chippenham.
Yeah.
I think you left from just after Chippenham. Yeah. And what? So anything else? I mean, what would a map reading exercise be like?
Well, you got the maps, and you set off the truck, and you had to tell the driver where to go. So, and hope that you've got the coordinates right. That was, you know, you'd be given the coordinates to get to that spot, and I didn't do a lot of it, but it was just enough so that I was able to, if we got separated, just the things. And convoys were dreadfully difficult to keep together. They were often bad for packing up tight, and then the front would go off, and then it would be spread out for miles. That's about it.
So you needed to know where you were going if you got separated.
Mm-hmm. I found it interesting, Mark, really.
What about Farnham, after Brighton, the period at Farnham and then Chippenham camp?
Yes. The nice camp outside north of Bury St Edmunds. Was it Farnham?
I'm not quite sure what it is. I think it's Farnham, but I don't know.
I don't know. I can't recall that name. It was a hundred camp with a nappy. And I knew one of the nappy girls there quite well. We went out there, incidentally, I brought my vegetable down. And got this Pete Young over here, that lives over here, to bring my bicycle down. Something or another, I captured that very quickly for quite a while. Well, I had it in London when I was on that course. I met a family who lived in Kew, and I cycled over there from the weekend from this course I was on. Thinking back about it, incidentally, there was a daughter there, but she had a boyfriend. Parents are all dead, naturally, but she married an American, and she's dead, so...
Now, you were still a Lance Corporal, or had you been...
By this time, somewhere along the line, I got a second strike, yes. Where? Now you're asking me something.
Doesn't matter too much. It was in that general period, before you left the unit.
Oh, yes, I was Corporal.
And did that make any difference? I mean, Lance Corporal hadn't made much difference. Corporal's getting a bit more senior.
Well, it made a difference, but not amongst my guys, the fellows. One of the big problems, I'll come to that later. But anyway, we quite enjoyed the Bury St Edmunds. I used to go on a bicycle, with some nice weather, go out around the area. But I was one of the, I think I was the only guy that had a bike.
Now, what about your sergeant, the MT sergeant? Had that changed by then?
Yes. By this time, we had this guy called Seawright, Dave Seawright. He's dead, apparently.
And what was he like?
Oh, he was a rascal.
In what way?
He drank heavily at night in the mess. And then he would come on parade in the morning, he'd be bitchy and bad-tempered and getting on to the guys, and of course I was in between, you know. I got all their stories. So actually, that was finally why I left, because of him.
And who was the MT officer, or would that, still in B Company, you wouldn't have an officer?
No, we didn't have No, we just had the sergeant. Like, the troops, each troop would line up with their officer in front on parade. And I mean, the mechanics section would line up with the sergeant in front of them. We didn't have an officer over us.
Now, one thing that was happening while you were at Bury St Edmunds and then Chippenham were a lot of English drafts came in.
Yes.
Now, there were a Scottish territorial regiment.
Yes.
How did you and other people react, having a bunch of English people, Londoners and the rest of it, being sent to your unit?
Well, I personally didn't mind, because I remember one fellow, Frank something or other, was called, really nice guy he was. He had quite a voice too. He was singing that song, What's It Rolls and What the Hell You Are. But I liked him, but he was corporal, he's the same rank as me. But my buddy, Jimmy, who was by this time Lance Corporal.
It's Jimmy Macon.
Yeah. He did like him because he saw in him opposition to him getting further promotion, which he couldn't get as long as I was sitting there and Seabright wasn't going to go anywhere. Because meantime, our Sergeant Stewart, he was now the regimental Sergeant Major in charge of mechanics. Okay? So,
Was there a culture clash at all? With the English?
No, not at all. No, I didn't think so. There was one fellow who came from Blackpool, Frank Farron his name was, beautiful pianist, but this is on a way on further on. I never knew that he played the piano prior to that. And I didn't know him that well. Thin lad, but he used to go play in the officer's mess. And he could play Warsaw Concerto totally. Fantastic, he was. Played on. He died mentally.
And there was no trouble with the English,
they fitted in
well.
No, we had some English fellows that were just great. There was one called Bobby Clark. In fact, he was Sir John's driver in France, in prior to that, too. A lovely little guy he was. He went to Australia, but he died, I think. Sir John told me he died. Last time he went to see the band.
Now, one thing that comes in around this time is the arrival of Covenanters and Crusaders.
Yeah.
Some people seem to think they're almost the same thing. What can you tell us? What did you think of the Covenanters and Crusaders? You got both, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We had them both. The Crusader was a 30-mile-an-hour job, synchronized gearbox, very easy to drive, light sticks, no air pressure and so on. Sticks forward the drove, you broke the stick, that track would become disengaged and run out of go. Liberty engine? Was that Liberty? I think it was V12. Very fast. Pickup was tremendous. I don't remember the weight.
Armour and gun?
They were a cruiser tank. That was the point about them. They were fast, supposed to be fast, or just a 2-pounder again, eh? That was a big problem. The Cromwells were the same. The Cromwells had a Meadows engine.
Did you have Cromwells?
No, sorry. Cut that out.
Covenanters.
Covenanters.
That's all right.
Jumping down.
Now, what was the difference? What were the Covenanters like? They seemed to have been almost...
They were really lower, and they're very similar in design. Same kind of crispy suspension. Yeah, crispy suspension, they call it. Big wheels. Very big. Great things to drive.
Were they cruiser tanks as well?
Cruiser.
So the armour and the guns were poor.
They used them in the desert a bit, actually. They used them in the army, but they were easily knocked out, of course.
Did you think they were better than the Valentines and Matildas?
Yes. For a reconnaissance regiment, say, for instance, dashing here and there, they were great. They could probably keep out of trouble with their speed, even on sand. But the Matildas and the Valentines, 15-mile-an-hour, 17-mile-an-hour top speed. And on sand, of course, they were pretty grim.
And Anything else about, well, we talked mainly about the Bury St Edmunds camp, but then the move to Chippenham camp, and that was, you were there at Chippenham for ages, until June 43, just before you went left from Rudston. Any change in your routine during that period?
No.
So you were just working in the MT, teaching people to drive. Would you be teaching?
No, I wasn't teaching by this time. No.
Would other people be on training people to drive by then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was no longer a special skill you had there?
No, not necessary by this time. Everybody had. Basically, it was maintenance I was teaching, you know, sitting on top of these engines, the covers all up, and adjusting traffic and showing the drivers how to do it, and anything, changing plugs. Adjusting tracks, they all knew how to do that.
Well, tell us how did you adjust tracks? So it's not easy to adjust a tank track, is it?
Well, it's not too difficult. The idler, the Covenanter and the Crusader were driven from the back. So there's usually some sort of clamping device for the idler wheel at the front. And you loosen off the clamping bolts, and then you have some sort of lever to pivot the idler so that it tightens the track, and then you clamp everything up again. Quite simple, hard work, but.
Would they be able to do things like, you know, when they got too stretching up to actually take a link out? Mm-hmm. Would they be able to do that?
Yeah, yes. It was feasible.
Mm-hmm. So you teach anything else you'd be teaching the drivers? You'd be teaching them to be sort of routine maintenance fitting work.
Yeah. Well, it got to the point though that by this time they were getting reasonably skilled, and there'd be some bright spark in each troop, and they had their own crew, and they did all their own maintenance. Yeah. Yeah. Heck of a lot.
Now, one thing that was going on while they were at Chippenham was that they kept getting you ready to go and then cancelling.
Yes.
And famously once, I mean, some of the tanks actually went. Mm-hmm. And then before the regiment was recalled. What do you remember of those occasions?
Well, I was on a party that went to Liverpool with the tanks. I don't recall how many of us were in it, but I helped to load these... was it just a... Crusaders. Anyway, onto a ship. That may have been a Liberty ship. You know, the Liberty ships in the war, American built things. And I remember trying to maneuver, what was it? I remember Skyhound, that was an American armored car. This was an AEC armored car, trying to get maneuvered into this spot. And it was just hopeless because it didn't have power steering. I had to give up, man. Anyway, as far as I understood, they were left on board ship. And I think, well, we didn't get them back. I think they went to the Middle East, the tanks. So I went back. Yeah, definitely. We're in Rudston by this time.
I'll come back. That's all right. How did you feel about this? I mean, you know, because you've been training a long time now. And
you just took it in your stride. See, a lot of the time, we weren't aware of what was going on. We were never informed of anything that was happening to do with the war progress. So, whatever happened, you just have to take it.
Now, did you actively want to get into action? I mean, when you read histories and they'll always say that the men were dying to get into action, but sometimes when you talk to the men, they weren't dying to get into action. They were quite happy to stay in England, thank you. How did you feel?
I wasn't particularly bothered one way or the other, I don't suppose. We were in the army and we just had to take what was going to happen to us. Yep.
You weren't particularly nervous about it, but you didn't look forward to it.
I don't think I had many thoughts about it at all. None of us had. We just went on day by day after day, week after week, and did what we were told.
Now, they moved to Rudston round about June 43, and yeah. You weren't with them long there. What was the setup at Rudston?
We were in a Nissen hut set up in a wood on the side of the road. You know, the tanks were on the other side of the road. It was a cold, sort of miserable camp, very damp. Well, we're going to Rivington, of course, for recreation, dancing or something. Or just you go in with the truck and then come back at night and sing our hats off, all the songs, coming home at night. But I didn't drink at all, so there was a lot of drinking went on. I said, not excessive. I wasn't too aware of excessive drinking.
Social drinking.
Yes.
Lads would get merry.
Yeah.
Now, while you were there, had they issued the Sherman?
The Sherman arrived then. At that point.
The Sherman's an important tank. I know you didn't stay with them much there, but it's an important tank for the Fife and Forfar because it's what they did a good deal of their action with. What was your opinion of the Sherman from top to bottom as a tank?
Efficiently, it was marvellous. Nothing went wrong with it. Really and truly, it was built mechanically perfect. I don't remember what engine we had. I have a feeling it was the radial engines that we had at Rudston.
Is that the ones where there's eight engines or six engines on one?
No.
That's the other one.
The radial is a nine-cylinder radial, right cycle. Now I can't remember what was in these, but I do remember. Later on, all the versions, because out in the Middle East, I was acquainted with each version there.
But this one, you think, was the radial?
I think it could have been the radial.
Now, what did you... So, they were mechanically reliable. They didn't. The engine was reliable, and they didn't break down. Now, what about the... It is a fighting tank. And what was it like to drive?
Well, they were easy enough to drive, yeah. It was a synchromesh gearbox, and they could do fairly well, roughly. Yeah. Stick work was heavy, it was hard to steer. I can't remember whether actually you could do a skid steering or not. See, most of them could. The British ones could all do a skid steering. You clamped it, it completely stopped the track. I don't think the Sherman could do that. No, it didn't.
And what about the crew arrangement? I mean, would you be familiar what each man in the crew did?
Yes, oh yes.
Can you just go through it for us?
The driver and the co-driver, who had a gun, a 303 at the front.
Would that be the Browning?
Yeah, the Browning it was. And of course there was the tank commander, whatever rank he was, and the gunner. And I think there were three in the turret, generally.
So there'd be a wireless operator?
Wireless operator, too. And they had a lot of them had a little charging unit for flat batteries. You could start this two-stroke unit up in the corner of the turret. And they were very handy, you know, for keeping the batteries charged up, that sort of thing, without running the main engine. Of course, not enough armour. Absolutely. Totally inadequate.
It looks quite thick when you see them. I mean,
well, it was thick until 88 started coming at it, but 75, probably a high muzzle velocity 75 would probably knock it out just the same.
Was it soft armour? I mean, because some people have said that the armour was just not as hard or resistant as British armour.
Ah, that I don't know.
Right, and what about the gun? It's, I think, 75mm, which is a step up on the 2-pounder, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, an improvement.
Or the 6-pounder, you know.
Yeah, funny, I think the Churchill had a 6-pounder at one time. Forget that one. We didn't.
Do you mean the Crusader?
No, the Crusader just had a 2-pounder.
Right, okay.
I don't think that. I'm sure it just
had. Did you ever have Churchills?
No.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay, I understand. Right. What did you... I mean, was this 75mm gun looked on as a good thing?
Oh, I think it was considered adequate until it come up against something better. Because they got knocked out dreadfully.
Now, were you, I mean, you're a man of a mechanical mind, were you aware of the possible threat that they'd catch fire if they were hit or things went wrong before you went into action? I mean, before you were involved in
the... Not too aware, no. So people never thought that they would pepper plant would, you know. If they got penetrated at all, it usually was a bomb drill. They just blew up.
But that was something you realised later, at the time.
Later, not at the time.
At the time, were you pleased with them, or did you just think, this isn't good enough?
Well, pleased enough with them, yes. Never gave a lot of thought about them coming up against another tank, you know, of equal status, shall we say. And then, of course, I wasn't involved in as a crew. So that was... Well, that's why I never really gave it a lot of time.
So you saw them as a mechanical thing, and mechanically they were very good.
Yes.
Did they need a lot of maintenance?
No. No, I don't think so.
And even without maintenance, they didn't break down?
Well, a lot of the time was spent on maintenance, but I mean, it was a lot of it was unnecessary. You know?
What sort of maintenance would you do on a show?
Well, if one track got stretched a bit, they would have to split the track up, take it off its tracks, which was quite a complicated business, and split them quarter ways, put the, you know, switch over these quarters to try to get the thing to go straight, because it wasn't a good idea when it kept wandering.
Okay. Now, what about your time at Rudston? It was while you were there, you seem to have made this decision to apply for overseas service.
Well, what happened, there was a call for volunteers to go overseas to reinforce some of the regiments in Egypt prior to them going to Italy. Now, I think they weren't volunteered. They were put on a list. Now, the strange thing was, this beautiful pianist was put on it. I don't think he volunteered. And there was the snake, he went on it. There was a sergeant major was on it as well. He was the bad one. He was considered to be the bad one.
In what way?
Probably too much of a disciplinarian and unfair at times.
Now, so what you're saying is that basically the regiment used this opportunity when they were asked for volunteers to clear out people who didn't fit or weren't wanted, for one reason or another.
Yeah, that's the impression I got. So I went to volunteer because I was totally dissatisfied with this sea rate, with these drunken capers in the morning. And of course I didn't drink, so it didn't go down well with me. Anyway, I went there and I was thrown out for John Kuhnberg.
Do you remember what he said?
It just wasn't for me. He wasn't going to release me. Yeah, something to that effect. So I got the sergeant major to take me in again, and I pleaded, and he finally put me on the list.
What was it? Was he cross with you for asking?
Yes.
How cross?
Not terribly. Not terribly. Because he took things in his stride. So John, he's a lovely guy. Oh, big